This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
Hey there, just a quick little note here at the beginning before we get started with the final episode of Season 1. This episode is coming out a little bit earlier. I'm trying to squeeze these in before Season 2 starts. And if you've been enjoying these, make sure you come back as I'm going to be covering all of Season 2. You can subscribe, you can return, you can be part of a bigger community, you can comment on our Patreon, all of that stuff. But most importantly, we're going to break down all of Season 2 episode by episode every week. The show comes out very soon on the 17th, and then every week from that point on. And so I will be adjusting the delivery of these episodes so that I have some time after the episode comes out to analyze it and comment on things, and then put out a new episode by the following Monday. So it won't be same day kind of thing, but I will be trying to get things out on a regular schedule, just shifting to the other side of the week, as these episodes have actually kind of slowly shifted earlier in the week in order to get everything out a little bit earlier for all of you. So if you're enjoying it, make sure you come back. Tell your friends. If you have friends who are into Fallout and they want to kind of figure out more about what's going on the show and may not have a background in the games and that kind of stuff, please send them over here. I would absolutely love to welcome them into this community and to be part of all the lore and the deeper end of the Fallout universe and all of that. And it absolutely does help out the show. It keeps the show going and it brings in new listeners, and that would be amazing. So thank you so much for being here. And thanks to all the patrons who help support the show. I won't be doing an extra little thing at the end welcoming new patrons because it hasn't been an entire week yet since the last episode, but I'll get to that on the next one. All right, I hope you enjoy. Vault Dwellers and Wastelanders, welcome back. This is our wrap-up for our rewatch of Season 1 of the Fallout TV show. We are talking about Episode 8, The Beginning. John is back with me again, and if you are just tuning in this one episode, he's the guy behind the 40K Lorecast, and he's my co-host for Retro Recall. John, welcome back.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Also, why did you just pick this one episode to listen to? My voice is on all of them, and I have a lovely voice. Come listen to me multiple times.
There you go. Mostly for his voice. But also, hey, if you're checking out Season 2 and you want some insight into some of the stuff and just to kind of remember what was going on, go back and listen through all the episodes that we've done, because we've got some different perspectives than when we first watched them, and you might too. So it's part of the fun, right? But here, let's get into Episode 8, because we've got a lot to go through. A lot of scenes flipping back and forth. This episode just goes. It just gets going, and it goes like a vertibird with Maximus in it, because that's the scene we're about to talk about. And yep. He's in the vertibird. He's remembering Lucy. They're flying to Philly. The radio says, and I had to stop and rewind in order to listen to this, but there's radio chatter behind him, and it says, "Locals put up a fight, but so did we." Meaning that basically they've taken over Philly and killed most of the people there. And then Maximus is now in a scene where he's presenting the head to Elder Quintus. And Quintus, of course, is a shrewd fellow. And he's like, "You lied to me then, just as you lie to me now," realizing it's not the same head, mostly because Maximus is, you know, he was lying that he was Titus. He was lying about bringing the head. He just doesn't trust him at this point.
Yeah. And I'll be, this opening, I'm not thrilled with. Not the show's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't like evil brotherhood. I'm fine with flawed brotherhood, but this one felt a little bit too much like evil brotherhood.
Yeah. And I think there's a good reason for it, though, because this group does not represent the majority of the brotherhood. And that starts to play out, right? Like Dane shows up, admits that Dane caused the injury and it wasn't Maximus's fault, basically helps him back up. And then we cut to a scene where Quintus is walking out of the darkness to talk to Maximus. Tell me that the setting is not intentional that this shady character who's leading a dark and very selfish brotherhood is now walking out of the darkness to talk with Maximus about what's going on, right? Like,
yeah, it's kind of my official on this, this whole scene. Like, if there's a element of, and this is again more me playing the early games, where the Brotherhood, and they do actually address this, and even in the fall, even when you get to Fallout 4, the Brotherhood still are mostly positive. I know I'll get
four starts to shift from 3, and they're very specific agenda to kill everything that's not human, and you know, all of that stuff gets pretty dark in 4. So I feel like it depends on the type of, well, the game, and it depends on who's leading the Brotherhood, and the moral pendulum kind of leans one way or another depending on what's going on. So you've definitely got that throughout the games, but I too enjoy a Brotherhood that seems to be a little bit more morally upstanding and a little bit more welcoming to, you know, cooperation and outsiders and those kinds of things, but they aren't always. And
that's
what we're seeing here.
And we get a nice explanation that, in effect, the Brotherhood, they acknowledge it, used to be a great organization full of, and they had the power to rule the wasteland.
Yeah. Oh, I have the quote right here. This is the exact quote. The Brotherhood has lost, this is Quintus talking, the Brotherhood has lost its way. We used to rule the wasteland, but power is taken, not given. A lesson you have learned, talking to Maximus. Mm-hmm. You and I, we will take power, and with it, we will start a new Brotherhood. Me as the head and the likes of you as its sword. Now, this tells me a few things. First of all, they are breaking from the rest of the Brotherhood, which really sets up the stuff that we've seen in the trailers for season 2 of some sort of internal conflict. He is trying to break away from the main structure and create a new Brotherhood under his own ideas and his ideology. But then he doesn't say, you, Maximus, will be my sword. He says, the likes of you, meaning that Maximus himself does not have a specific place in this. He is a tool to be used, just like the suits of armor and everything else that they've been acquiring.
And that's the whole thing with this, is that this group of Brotherhood, and we saw it, they're cruel.
Yes.
We saw this in the very first episode. We saw it with actual Knight Titus. We've seen there is a cruelty within them.
I think that's
that
very
exists,
well said.
Yeah. And he, and this is where kind of, I think for, at least for me watching the show, like, hey, why is the Brotherhood shitty?
Right. Why are they so cruel? I think that's the difference between them and different groups.
Yeah.
Is like even Maxon's group in 4 isn't cruel the way that this group is cruel.
Yeah.
He might have some dark intentions, but they treat their members well.
Yeah. That's the Maxon's group is brutal.
Yes.
But they are not cruel.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right.
I mean, again, unless you're on the other side of them, in which case, might feel cruel.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you're a Superman in the wasteland, then they're going to be cruel to you. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But then the scene wraps up with a line, your entire life you've been looking for a home. Build one with me. This both implies that, it just shows us that Quintus is trying to lure him in for the based on the things that he knows that he wants. But it also reconfirms one of Maximus's most motivating factors is the fact that he still doesn't feel like he truly belongs anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's Emperor Palpatine, but it's like that's what this is meant. I mean, and then we get the scene, obviously, as he's saying this, of Maximus staring up at the Brotherhood soldier in the power armor who saved him when he was in Shady Sands and got blown
as a child. Yeah, So then we get to Lucy. She's entering the observatory. This is where we know Moldaver is due to scenes in the previous episode. She walks through fields of corn. And this is exactly like her memories of being a child with her mother, which reconfirms that they were out here. They used to be here in this very location. Yep. She just didn't know it because she was too little. And she notices some things. These people are living peacefully. There are humans and ghouls living together. This feels organized. This is way more organized and peaceful than Philly was or any of the other places that she's been, except for maybe Vault 4. And it's kind of, you can see it in her face. It floors her that this can exist on the surface.
Yeah. And what was interesting is one of the ghouls is just won't stop staring at her.
Yeah.
Which is another hint of like, is it her vault uniform or is it her?
Right.
And we'll get a better answer on that in a second.
Right. Are they recognizing her from when she was little? Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. But now we start getting, we talked about this in the last episode, the hot flashes. Oh, sorry, hot flashes, but the quick flashes. There we go. The quick flashes where, you know, in most of the episodes prior, you would sit on one scene for a few minutes or longer, maybe up to 10 minutes. Now we start flipping scenes because now we're, and it makes you almost lean forward in your chair because, like, okay, a lot's about to happen.
Yes, the pace is increasing.
To what we just described, I mean, Lucy walks into the observatory. I don't think she says a word.
No.
And then it cuts.
No. It's just a setup scene that you would expect before a conversation, and then we don't get it.
And there's and it just cuts to the ghoul, who's also heading there in front of a very good Sunset Sarsaparilla sign.
Yes.
I did love that little moment. And again, nothing. Just then it cuts again.
And he's remembering his trip, right, to Vault-Tec. And then so this is the scene where he pulls up in his fancy car. He's dropping Barb off to her meeting. After messing up her oil change, she says, most guys with rides this nice would be afraid to get their hands dirty. This is implying two things. One, Cooper is very capable. He's a very capable individual. He changes his own oil. He doesn't need to. He's a fancy Hollywood star. Yet he still does that. He grew up on a farm. He likes to do things himself. Mm-hmm. Also, he messed it up on purpose in order to drive her to the office.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the kind of guy who could do an oil change. He didn't make a mistake. He's there on purpose. Bud pulls up.
It's also pretty hard to mess up an oil change so bad that you break a car, by the way.
Right, right. Like, right. And so maybe she doesn't know how cars work, and so he uses this as an excuse or whatever, right? So Bud pulls up in his little dinky convertible compared to his.
Yeah.
And he talks about Bud's buds, his plan to keep moving centuries into the future, this idea to wait them out. Why would Vault-Tec risk ending the world and their own safety? The answer to this is because they have vaults and cryogenic technology, which plays into his idea of, well, if we just wait out the competition, we have the tech to do so. Let's utilize that, which makes sense from any business standpoint, from any corporate standpoint. You look at the things that you have and you go, how do we utilize what we have and what the competition doesn't have in order to beat the competition? So his genius plan is we bring the end of the world, we hole up in cryogenic chambers, and we just wait everyone out. Which
this plan makes no sense to me, to be perfectly honest. Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, and even Mr. House calls it out, actually. We're going to get to that scene in a little bit here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just, I digress.
Yeah, so the scene ends, the Pip-Boy's acting, Barb mentions the Pip-Boy's acting up. She goes inside. Cooper can't hear the clear signal, so he has to go in the building. Then we get the Fallout logo. This is the only logo that's just a black and white screen, like on a on an old TV monitor. Then we're back to Lucy. She's meeting with Moldaver, and she sees her father. He's all locked up. Moldaver says, welcome. We get the glimpse at this really falling apart ghoul at the table.
Yeah.
Who appears feral, but is not violent. So interesting.
Well, she is strapped in. She's strapped in. She's missing one arm, and she is strapped into the chair.
But she doesn't seem to be trying to get out. She seems like, okay, I'm stuck here, and she's not fighting it. Mm-hmm. But she also doesn't appear safe either at the same time. Yeah. It's kind of this balance going on.
And Moldaver has not aged a day is the important piece here.
Yes.
From the scene we saw last episode.
Or maybe slightly. It's hard to tell if it's just wear from being out in the wasteland or if it's age. She does look, to my eyes, she looks a little bit older, but that might just be the fact that we saw her in the past with makeup and a nice fancy outfit and her hair done, you know? So like, who knows?
Well, it's always tough aging actors and actresses because you're like, do we make them gray? Basically, my view was if they don't have gray hair, I assume that the attempt was to have them not be aged.
Right.
Because, I mean, I'm in my mid 40s. I have all the gray hair. So it doesn't,
And I've got less gray hair than you do, but, you know, people sometimes often mistake me for being younger than I am. But it's hard to tell, right? That's kind of the point. Mm-hmm. So Lucy was going to blow everyone up. She says, I was going to blow everyone up, but that's not how I was raised. She was going to bring in a grenade or something and stick it in the head. But let's keep things civil. Now, please give me my dad back, right? So she's there for my dad. She's like, this is just what I'm going to do. Moldaver takes the cold fusion out of the head's neck and tells her, she basically says, you don't realize who your father really was. He wasn't born in a vault. Like, there's things that you don't know. End scene. Quick end scene. Transition to Norm in Vault 31.
Yep.
He frees the robo, but little mini robo brain from being stuck behind a broom.
Well, and the robo brain is hilarious because it's basically giving itself a pep talk as it was a mop because it was stuck behind the mop.
It was a mop.
Like, right. This way to freedom, and then gets stuck. Okay, not that one. It was a really nice. It reminded me a lot of Big MT in New Vegas.
It was New Vegas.
Reminded me of some of the robots in the robo brains and
it's Bud. It's Bud's brain. Yep. Who's in this robot? Why
didn't go great for Bud?
I don't know if he volunteered to put his brain in a robot or something happened, and that's just how he ended up.
My guess is
we don't know.
Yeah,
but and again, it's showing us how like this genius idea of his is really working out because he's now a little robot stuck behind a mop, right? Like it puts it in perspective. Like he thinks he's a genius, but yet look what he's now relegated to. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to poke him with a syringe and just totally misses. Well, Norm just sidesteps it.
Yeah, it's a great line, because he recognizes that Norm is not supposed to be there. And Norm turns to him and says, "What is this place?" And he's got his syringe and says, "I won't answer your questions unless you let me inject you with this."
Right.
Which Norm just walks away.
Yeah, he just kind of barely looks at him and just steps to the side.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Initiate protocol 53. I don't know what that is a reference to, but I feel like it has to be a reference to something, or they just picked a random number. Not really sure. And then he's like, "Don't go in there." And then it jumps to the next scene. Cooper, back in the past, at Vault-Tec, they're having the big meeting, and he's like spying in with his listening device, right? The woman at the desk says, "Don't mind if I bring Henry in. He's a big fan." Oh, you got some insight here?
Yeah, so what it was Vault 53 was a failed vault. So it's a term in the game. So an experiment where the experiment was meant to break down periodically, that's Vault 53.
Protocol 53. Interesting.
Yes,
okay.
So there's a reference there.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I thought maybe, and then I just wasn't sure, but he's doing the research on the spot. Look at that. Good job.
I got you guys.
So then Cooper's listening to the meeting, and we have Bud saying, talking about this group of like-minded corporations, and sitting at the table, we have Big MT, Repcon, Westech, and Robco. These are all representatives of those businesses.
Yep.
Signs of intending to drop the bombs are, basically, there are signs that Vault-Tec is probably planning to drop the bombs because there's a line where they say, "Peace agreements have set us back." Meaning their hope was that war would happen so that the vaults would get used. And so they wouldn't have to do anything to make that happen. But now there's peace agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole discussion about what it would be like to be up on the surface. This is what we talked about in the last episode, where they are implying that the surface dwellers are going to be lesser than human. There's a lot of that kind of talk going on.
Yeah, so Westech is very concerned about that. You also get a lot of, I believe it was Mr. House basically calls them out, and it's just like, well, you know, a bunch of rats inside of a maze will eat themselves.
Yeah, yeah. This
like,
is the quote. Know, I got that no quote better. Too. Yeah. He says, "Who's to say your rats," meaning lab rats in the vault, because they'll be experimented on, "are going to survive better than those animals on the surface?" Animals is traditionally language used to dehumanize people you don't like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before that, we have what is the ultimate weapon of mass destruction? The question is posed by Bud, right? And Cooper responds, "Time," at the same time Bud does.
Yeah.
And then that's when he says, "That's how we'll win the game of capitalism, by outliving our competitors," which confirms the things that they discussed at the cars.
Yeah.
You can see that the other corporations here are doubtful of the plan. Barb looks at the character in the shadows above. This is interesting. Well,
and I think that's a key piece here.
Yes.
Because this is the whole question, because Barb is there with Bud. And you said it well, I think it was in the last episode, that Bud's kind of adult. Like,
right.
Bud is not, he's not this overly intelligent person, yet he's in an incredible position of power. And so the question is, how can he be there? And I think my thinking here is that what we're getting is Bud is a figurehead. Bud is not intelligent. This is why he ends up being the brain attached to a Roomba later on with a useless syringe.
Yeah.
Bud is really just doing the actions of someone else, cough, cough, Enclave, who are really behind
the shadowy
all of this stuff.
Man up in the rafters, right? Yeah.
Whereas Barb actually knows who that person is. And so she looks, so what happens as the room's getting aggressive and people are kind of saying, this idea you have is stupid. Like, right. Like this right. is a dumb, why would we ever invest in this? We're going to have peace. Also, like, why would I invest basically in the end of the world? And Cooper is rooting for his wife. And this
he's
like
hoping
this
she's going
scene.
To bring some semblance of sense to this and that she will be a voice of reason and morality in this scenario. And then she says how to provide a better future for our children, which makes us go, okay, that seems like a good motivation, but what does that actually mean? I think that you're onto something here as well. When you look at the, there aren't name tags on the table. There are labels for the businesses that each person works for.
Yeah.
And that implies that that person for all of these other businesses, Big MT, Repcon, and we know those are the leaders of these businesses. We know right. that the people who are sitting behind the Vault Tech labels are Bud and Barb, but they both aren't the CEO, right? In fact, we don't know what their actual titles are. Are they just representatives? Is Bud a sales guy and she's there because she's representing other interests? Like, what is going on, right?
Because she got a promotion. They're both there, but they're at best senior VPs.
Something,
at best.
Right.
Whereas the other people there, Mr. House is there. So, you know, we know, because the rest of them, we don't really know the people, the West Tech, Big MT. I've got their
names later on, because here's a trick. If you pause the show on Amazon, you can see what the name of the actor and character is. So I'll bring those up in a little bit. But so we know that the assumption is that they are all in leadership, which is pretty accurate. But I think what we're also seeing is that Barb and Bud are not actually the leaders of they're not the person behind the scenes. They're somebody else. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's probably Vault Tech. It's probably a CEO who's also an Enclave. It's definitely Vault Tech, but it's definitely also Enclave, I would think.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's Enclave. I've always assumed that. We got that revealed. The Enclave and Vault Tech were together at some point.
Oh, absolutely. There are cross connections between all these different people and their allegiances.
That's where we have. And the thing that Barb says is interesting here is because we were going down the path. Of course, we diverted a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what she talks about, like, I think about my family.
Yes.
And then she says, so we need to hedge our bets, is what she says. So it's coming down the positive. Then she flips back.
Yes.
And that's where it stops there, because we're going to come back to more.
Like,
of
hedge
this
our
later.
Bets how, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we flip back to
Norm,
I believe.
Yep. Norm in Vault 31. Yeah. He says, where's the rest of the vault? It's just a bunch of cryo chambers. And Bud says, these are Bud's buds. we get the line, America outsourced our survival of this country to the private sector, but it would have been insane to keep a failed nation alive. So we kept Vault Tech alive instead. Mm-hmm. Which is like one of the themes that plays throughout Fallout and through other shows and things like this is this idea. And you see this a lot in New Vegas, this idea that democracy failed. In fact, this is one of the things House is real big about, is like democracy failed. And so therefore we need a better system. But the thing that they don't mention any time in these games where they mention the failure of democracy or the fact that the NCR is going to be making the same mistakes that the democracy before them made, is the fact that the democracy did not fail because democracy doesn't work. It failed because it was co-opted by a bunch of rich people who had agendas that were not beneficial to the majority of the population. That's a very different reason for the failure of democracy. So, interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's interesting, the only thing about that line, which was odd to me, and again, I'm probably nitpicking and we'll get more of it later, is that, you know, he's implying that we replaced the democracy with Vault Tech. Mm-hmm. Which then becomes the question of, well, what about President? Is it President Richardson in Fallout 2?
Richardson, that's right.
Yeah, it's President Richardson, who implies that no, they did all survive. The president did survive,
right?
They,
but they but if did that was the all that this. Was now the Enclave. The president was member of Enclave, which was also in cahoots with Vault Tech, which means,
fair enough.
Which I think is that connective tissue, right? Like, so we got rid of, basically what he's saying is democracy failed. So instead we're going back to some sort of authoritarian system with a corporate vibe. Like,
yeah,
that's really what he's saying. And It just baffles me how many people out there will respond to episodes where I will say, like, well, that's a dumb idea, because every time authoritarian systems try to do things in this world, they just make it worse for everybody. But for some reason, people think, oh, that's a good idea. It's better than democracy. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that, like,
but then we get the reveal of what Fallout 32 and 33 really are. And we did get a hint, and I can't remember when it, my timing on this could get wrong. Barb and them, when they're in the meeting, mentioned Vault 31, that mentioned their three vault planet, 31, 32, 33. Yes. Maybe after this or before this. I could get that a little bit wrong.
Let me keep going through and we'll get to that part. Yeah. So we've got Norm in the vault, right? Talking to this guy. That scene wraps up. Bud even says the future of humanity comes down to one word: management. That's right. His whole thing. Then we get to Barb in the meeting again. We have a plan for three vaults, but we have over 100. Let's divide these up. Each of you can run some and we'll compete to see who comes up with the best solution for survival. That starts to resonate with the group. Then we pan back to Norm, Vault 31.
That's right.
Bud planning to create super managers. His plan is to create super managers.
Yes.
Then wipe the surface clean. He very clearly says that the agenda for Vault Tech is to make powerful super managers, the kinds of people that should be leaders in this new world, and then we will destroy everyone on the surface. And there's nothing he could have said that was more enclave than that.
Yeah.
That's basically kill everyone who's infected with any form of FEV or anything at all who has been, you know, who is not one of us, destroy all of them and replace them with super managers. This is identical to Nazi eugenics.
Yeah.
It is one and the same.
What I laughed about was that he then, in effect, reveals that Vault 31 and Vault 32 and 33 are just breeding centers for the Vault 31 people. And that's why they keep
in order to create super managers.
They bring them out of cryo. They then, you know, breed with the locals and then, I guess, go back into cryo.
Yeah, they seem to swap out. That seems to be one of the things Norm learned on the role of who had served as managers previously. And it seems like they cycle in and out. And once they're gone long enough for the current people to have never known them.
Every few generations, which makes sense.
They can come back out of freezing for a decade and then they get put back or whatever. I don't know if it's a decade. I'm just throwing out numbers. Then we're back to Barb's meeting, right? So now we're back to each of the different reps with their ideas for vaults, right? Fred Sinclair from Big MT is there. He says, overcrowd a vault so people have to compete to survive.
Yeah.
Julia
vault
Masters.
27.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know all the names? I don't know all the names.
Vaults. Yeah. I know the vaults. Yes. That's Vault 27, where they had 2,000 people instead of 200.
Right. Yeah. I don't know them by number. They all get jumbled in my head. But we've talked about this before, how I have a hard time remembering names and labels. Julia Masters from Repcon says, a vault governed by a robot that, based on the one that delivers milk to the front door that they're currently working on.
Yeah, that's Vault 51. So that overseer is a robot and then kills everybody.
Yes. Yeah. Leon von Felden from Westech says, super soldier vault using illegal immigrants. Yep. That absolutely happened. That's how super soldiers
or
super
mutants. Vault 87, the FEV virus.
Yep, super mutants were created that way. Also at Mariposa, I remember that word for some reason all of a sudden. Then pump psychotronic drugs into the air supply is mentioned by a voice, and I'm not sure whose voice that is. At first, I thought it was House, but I don't think it is. I think it might be Fred again.
It's probably Fred again because that's Vault 106. So that's the one where there were psychotropic drugs in the air supply. So that's one of the fun missions you get to go on.
Mm-hmm. And then Julia says from Repcon says separate parents and children, and the smartest kids are the only ones who reach adulthood.
Another that's Vault 75.
Another vault.
Which game you're from in that one? Where you
75?
Vault 75.
Is that New Vegas?
That's Vault 75.
Might have been New Vegas. No, was it 3? Somebody's going to comment on this episode. They'll be like, this is the one. And then House says, fun idea. Fun idea.
Fallout 4.
Was it Fallout 4?
The Malden Middle School. That's the one. Fallout 4.
Yeah. Fun idea. A lot of earning potential with the end of the world. How can you guarantee results? Barb says, by dropping the bombs ourselves. Now, a lot of people, when this came out, took it to absolutely confirm that Vault Tech are the ones who dropped the bombs first. But she is only replying that this would be the plan to guarantee the results. This only means that they are considering the option. It doesn't mean they necessarily did it.
Well, and again, this comes to that question of Vault-Tec Enclave. It is that,
sure.
How far apart are they?
Yes.
Because the other thing too is, let me point it out, like people aren't living in the vaults yet. So you need to, if you're going to, again, you and I are not old enough to have lived through an atom bomb drop, neither nor are we in Nagasaki. So it really hasn't come
sure.
up for a while.
Sure.
But the point being is that it's, if your whole plan is the bombs drop, the end of the world's coming, you have to get into a vault, that speed is going to be, it's a lot easier to get to the vault when you know the bombs drop is coming.
Right, right. But there, like, we know from the games that there was not warning, at least for the majority of the population who ended up in vaults. They just got word over the radio and air sirens and had to run into the vaults. Like, we have scenes of that. We also have the scene at the beginning of the season where Cooper and his daughter are not in a vault. Right. And if Barb has something to do with an understanding and knowing the plan of when to drop the bombs, then why would she have, maybe she had a fallout with Cooper and they weren't getting along and they divorced or something, but why would she put her daughter in danger? That doesn't make any sense. It makes sense that she would have had a bring your kid to work day or something and then taken her daughter into the vault for safety.
Well, they would have been living in the vault already. Actually,
or already, right.
To test it. Yeah.
Right. But that doesn't happen, which leads me to believe that the bombs dropped earlier than they planned. They may have been planning to drop it later that same day or the next week or something. But I'm of the opinion that it's more likely that war came to them before they expected it and the Chinese launched it, which coincides with Tim Kaine's original plan for the reason why all this stuff worked in Fallout 1 and how it would have happened if he had continued writing the story, which he didn't because he only got to work on Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. So, some more details.
He did good work, though.
Yeah, he did great work. Yeah, great guy. Go watch his YouTube channel. He's got all sorts of insightful stuff about video games and Fallout and all that kind of stuff. Barb, we get back to Barb. Nuclear event would be tragedy. Okay, so these are my notes, and sometimes I write them in ways that I'm not 100% sure what I meant when I wrote them. I wrote, nuclear event would be tragedy, but opportunity, perhaps greatest ever, no one left to fight, a true monopoly. This idea that they can just destroy the competition outright. And then Hank enters. This is where Henry, the super fan of Cooper, is allowed to get to meet him because he's in the building, and we realize Henry is Hank McClane, they're the same person. Yeah.
Who has had quite the promotion from this moment for somehow or another.
Well, he's on the list of potential super managers, I guess, and ends up.
And we also at this point, is it here or at this, we get the line of war never changes from Barb.
I think that's coming up. Yes, that's coming up in just a scene because it pivots back to Moldavers. It reveals Hank has been around a long time. Hank loves Cooper's character.
That's dark turn. The hard cut.
There we go. Shooting his enemy, all of that stuff. Then we go back to Barb, and the line is specifically, this is our chance to make war obsolete, because in our current societal configuration, which took shape without intentional guidance, we have friction. Basically meaning like, society evolved naturally without any guidance from anybody, but we could do a better job. Then she says, we have conflict and we have war, and war never changes. So the idea here is not just, she's taking Bud's idea and fleshing it out more. Instead of just like, we're going to go vault and outwait our enemies, she's explaining, if we can just wipe the slate clean, we can make a better system from the ground up. Which is absolutely in line with like every comic book supervillain ever.
Well, because it is, the thing is, I'm not going to defend Vault-Tec, but the concept here of a lot of what they're trying to do is the end of the war is going to happen. We know it's going, the end of the world is going to happen. We know it's going to happen. We could choose when, and by choosing when, we could choose to survive it.
Right.
That becomes kind of the overarching theme around Fallout, but then falls apart with the weird vault experimentation.
But also, we know from the previous episode that they had already designed, Moldaver and her team had designed cold fusion power and would have solved the resource wars. So, and that Vault-Tec had shelved the plans for that. True. So if they really wanted to stop the end of the world from happening, they had the ability to provide unlimited power to the entire globe. And they decide not to do it because they would rather wipe the slate clean and rebuild it from the ground up so that there's no conflict, there's no competition, none of that. And so to me, that shows that they took the path of we want to be rulers and powerful, and it doesn't matter who we have to kill to do it, rather than the path of, well, why don't we make peace with the Chinese and help supply the ailing world with the power they need in order to have the resources that they need? Because that was the whole reason why everything was coming to a head, is a lack of resources over time.
Yeah. The war in Alaska over oil. Yep.
Over oil, yep. The fall of the equivalent of the European Union, I forget what it's called. Yep. Of course, words fall out of my head. All of that stuff, and the conflict with China. So now we're back to Moldaver. I have written here, he never told you or your mother where he's really from. And then my next note is, mother was like Lucy, kind, loving, curious. You came to know why I took your father. She's basically talking to Lucy and kind of revealing things step by step as we pan back and forth.
Yeah.
Now we're back to Maximus for the first time in a while with the Brotherhood. He's suiting up. He thanks Dane. Dane is sent into this conflict as punishment, we find out.
Yep.
Scared of going into the wilds. Didn't mean they'd blame Max. Basically apologizes, like, hey,
yeah,
I put the thing in my shoe in order to keep myself from being sent out there. I was too scared to go do it. I didn't think they'd blame you. Max basically says, hey, it's fine. You're forgiven. Because he sent him on this journey where he got to meet Lucy. That seems to be the justification there, right? And then, go ahead.
No, this scene was, I like the scene because, again, this idea of the Brotherhood is a grinder. And that's the idea. So Dane, hey, I'm too afraid to fight. I'm like, great, go fight. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Right. Like, that's how this goes.
You're now a soldier. This, you have one job. Go do it. But we come to find out that Max's motivation here is really to rescue Lucy at this point. Like he said in the previous episode before they left, he was find her again, that kind of thing. And he now believes that vaults are peaceful and safe and is still ignorant to that fact, because Lucy was still kind of ignorant to that fact.
Right.
Dane says there's nowhere safe and there's no leaving, implying like, dude, you're stuck and those vaults are not as safe as you think they are.
Yeah.
Then the vertebrates lift off. And then we get the next Moldaver scene with Lucy. Your mother discovered that something was siphoning the vault's water. This is Moldaver explaining what's going on to Lucy. One clue, she deduced civilization returned to the surface. So she was wise enough to know, like, okay, something's going on. There must be people up there. Hank pushed back against that, and she realized he was hiding things. So she ran with her children. They went to Shady Sands. Hank went after her, took the children, and burned the city down. All of this stuff gets revealed, which goes into the thing we just talked about in the last episode, where she felt like, oh, my father would never forgive me for doing exactly killing that same thing to a community,
people in order to save someone, whereas Hank's a monster.
Yes.
And that's this, again, we talked in our last episode about like these D&D character arcs where Hank starts off as, you know, this lawful good, and it's actually turns out no, he's pure evil. He is lawful evil. He is bad human being. And yeah, so he nuked Shady Sands, which also made me think of something else. When Buddy is talking to earlier about how we're going to, you know, make a vault full of the world's best managers and then wipe the surface out, that also explains, well, how did he nuke Shady Sands?
Yes,
I think Vault Tech still has nukes.
Absolutely.
They still have all these weapons. They have access to them somehow.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Then we get this real banger of a line from Moldaver. That's how Vault Tech deals with competition, just like they did 200 years ago, implying they're the ones who dropped the bombs.
Yep.
Then discussion about cold fusion, limitless power for everyone, the same tech that she was working on, all of that stuff. She just needs someone from Vault Tech to use the code. Then the question becomes, okay, what happened to Lucy's mother? And it pans to the ghoul. She was clearly ghoulified by the explosion at Shady Sands. And Lucy sees the necklace and it just clicks. She knows.
Yep.
And then Lucy says, give her the code, Dad. And he inputs it. The question here is, does Hank actually care? Or does he realize that like he is in no place to negotiate at all at this point?
Yeah, I think Hank at this stage is kind of broken, because he's never, the thing about the Vault Tech, the only person from Vault Tech we've seen that actually has kind of their stuff together is Barb.
Yeah, she's very capable. Yes.
Everyone else is made is shown to be it's a guy in a suit who's just, you know, oh, I got lucky and I work for the big corporation.
Right.
The big
which corporation is so gave true. Me promotion. Right. Like, I mean, how many people in your life? I mean, we're both 40 somethings who have worked for corporations and major businesses. How many people have you worked with have made themselves to very high level positions in corporations, not because they are capable, but because they had good connections?
Yeah. And it's the example I use with Buddy, when we had the whole thing where, the ghoul is confronting him, back when you have his original name, is confronting him about the power armor. Like, hey, you guys made bad power armor. But it's like, oh yeah, I'm not really big into QC.
Yes.
Like, and now this guy's leading the organization.
Right.
Like, leading, but not officially. But, you know, it becomes that whole thing. So I think what we get here is Hank just kind of, oh, I'm in trouble. Sure, because even if you look at the way they did Hank's makeup, he's meant to look, obviously, he's been exposed to a lot of sun. His face is sunburned, but he also looks weak.
Beaten down. Tired.
It's how his makeup is done. It's obviously intentional, whereas Moldiver looks, we talked about this a little bit before, she looks like she's been exposed to the weather, but she still looks confident. She looks proud. Like, she has her stuff together. Hank looks weak inside of the cage.
Yes, yes. And we'll get to that other Bud thing in a minute. But we go back to Norm in Vault 31. He tries to leave. Bud says he can't leave. He closes the door. Can't leave until we go to the surface. Could be 100 years. So use your dad's cryopod pod to wait it out.
Yeah.
Which is funny. So we go back to Lucy and Hank. Hank says, I did what was necessary to save our people. And that woman over there, she's no different than me.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yep.
Which draw these connections, yeah.
Well, and it's a little bit of a trope, unfortunately, but it is this whole idea of like, yeah, I'm a bad person, but so is the other people.
Right.
So
which
I'm
is exactly what bad people think, is that everyone else thinks like they do. They're just pretending like they pretend to be a good person.
And he does make a fair point that Moldiver did murder a bunch of people breaking into their vault, you know, and did lead, you know.
True.
Moldiver is not the best person because she's also means to an end.
Right.
Is where Moldiver falls a little bit more into.
Which is crazy. When you think about it, isn't that what war always does? Is it causes somebody becomes the aggressor and is usually doing it for some negative reason, but then somebody has to defend themselves and has to do atrocious things to simply try to right the wrongs. And it makes everybody a villain in some way due to desperation. And the Wasteland kind of does that too. It's that same war never changes. It's another reason why that quote makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And then so as the fusion reactor gets going, now we get the fight scene.
Yeah. Well, OK, so we go back to Lucy and Hank. Hank says, I did what is necessary, gets the fusion reactor going. Then he says, I loved your mother, but she stopped being your mother when she left home, when she took you into danger. It just goes to show how much he believes that the Wasteland is terrible and not safe and the people on the surface are not people and all of that. They continue to talk over the battle. You've seen what it's like up here. Everyone's equally afraid and miserable, forced to do horrible things to survive. I had to make a choice between their violent world and our peaceful one. And I believe I know. And he says, I believe I know I made the right choice. And the irony here is that he and Vault-Tec caused that exact horrible world that he is now having to make this hard choice about and justify his evil behavior. So it is their fault that they're in a situation where he continues to have to be evil. It's like, it just kind of cycles.
It's entirely his fault. And also the vaults are horrible too. So he's in one of the good ones. You know, Vault 31, 32, 33, they are good vaults. But the other ones are pretty rough.
Right. Due to poor quality control. Thanks, Bud. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. It all ties together.
And some intentional, I mean, woof. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah, so then we get the Brotherhood, Max, they're on the vertibirds, missiles are fired, Max gets out, he moves in, it pans to Lucy. The song that plays is I don't want to see tomorrow by Nat King Cole. And it goes on and says, unless I see it with you, again, playing up that romantic reason why he's coming back. And the lyrics here are about tomorrow being a bright new day and sun breaking through. So there's like this hopefulness in the song, even though atrocious, terrible things are happening because everybody's murdering each other.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. This fight scene was terrible.
You didn't like it?
No? It's because of, and we talked about this in one of our earlier ones I was on with you, the power armor is just too plasticky and too clunky. So it
you want to see people punching through people.
Yeah, I mean, again, I also do I do a podcast, multiple podcasts on Warhammer 40K. So power armor is kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You've got some
Those soldiers are like, what, like significantly bigger and taller and stronger and all of that.
It doesn't line up. Yeah. I mean, the Space Marine is a super soldier inside a super suit, but there's still an element of the, that scene. It felt cheap. I'm just going to say
it is a TV show, and their budget has increased. Like you can tell the new season.
I'm looking forward to this season and see what they can do with it. But I remember that scene. I was like, oh, it's this cool fight scene. And I'm kind of like, oh, this is.
It was like a TV show fight scene.
Yeah. I was like, oh,
yeah.
But anyway,
that's fine.
But then once they get away from, and this is just, it's more of probably a personal gripe. Once they get away from the large scale fight scene, now we move into a small scale fight scene,
which
TV can do great.
Right.
And now it lights up.
Right. And so during the battle, we go to Hank and mentions the solution is to remove factions and leave only us, which reconfirms Vault-Tec's intentions previously. Then we have this machine gun scene where it tears everybody down. And like, you can finally see like power armor soldier with, you know, miniguns and all that. Right. Then we go to the ghoul fight scene.
This scene's cool.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question here is like, he shows up in the corner. Everybody's in the small room. It's dark. And he talks about how, like, oh, they still have the flaw in the armor. And he shoots one, turns off the lights. Now, the questions here, of course, are, don't those suits have lights on them?
Yeah.
They do.
In night vision?
And
they do.
They didn't use that.
I've played them in the game.
Right. Yeah. Like, why didn't they think to use that? I don't know. Maybe they're not trained very well. Maybe the ghoul realized that Maximus wasn't trained very well. Maybe none of the other knights are trained very well in them either. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're old suits that just don't work right. I don't know. But it did feel like one of those small moments in the show where it was like, did the creators, did they really think this through? They could just turn the lights on.
You guys fight in the dark. Yeah, I'm wearing a helmet with a heads up display. Night vision. I can put lights on. I've put that upgrade in my TL.
Right.
45.
Right. So we have that fight scene. Then we're back to Hank and Lucy. Hank says, open the door. Let's go home. Lucy looks at her mom. The headless power armor soldier walks in and falls down, which is fun. Max walks in. Hank says, I'm her father. Can you get us out? Max shoots the lock to let him out.
Of course.
Lucy tells Max his father was responsible for Shady Sands, which of course changes his mind immediately. Hank takes the power armor while they're sitting there talking from the headless guy that was laying there. It says, Lucy, you're coming with me. Punches Max, knocks him out.
Yeah.
And then Lucy draws the gun on her father.
Mm-hmm.
And his response is, you see what this place does to people?
Yes. That's the thing. Because he's completely unwilling to take any responsibility for any of his decisions.
Yes.
Correct. Everything he does is correct. But look, now, like, you're against your father. And I've done nothing. And to his credit, he's done nothing to harm her. Lots of things to harm people that she cares about and loves, but nothing to harm her. So in his mind, like, what? We're still good. Why are you upset with me?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I like this scene too, because going back to the Maximus thing, where he's like, oh, I'm here to be the hero. And we get a little bit of a glimpse back to, like, you could either put a knock on him of, like, you know, where he just frees the guy who murdered his whole family.
Yeah.
Or it's more the piece of, there are no good people in the wasteland.
Right. Right.
Everyone's got a backstory.
Right. Also, he shows up to save her and then ends up doing the wrong thing, not knowing, you know, but basically takes the information, just trusts him. Oh, I'm his father. I'm her father. So, okay. Yeah. I'll free you. You must we know who the bad guys are, but he doesn't. And then, Hank continues to manipulate her. And then the ghoul enters, shoots at Hank.
Yeah.
And we get the line, you want another autograph, young Henry?
Yeah.
Then he says, Fio fuerte y formal, which is Spanish. It translates to ugly, strong, and formal, or dignified, could be the translation, which I did some research on this. Turns out it's a eulogy that is used to describe a man of rugged appearance, strength, and honor.
Yeah.
Which plays back to his role in the movies. It would have been a line that he used in those movies, right? So,
which Hank loved. Hank was a huge fan of all of his movies.
Right.
So he's delivering. I think that line may have been from
in the movie, right? Before he killed them.
The movie he didn't like. So it's the line he used in the movie before he kills the bad guy. He complains about the director in the beginning, in the very early episode, saying, you know, I don't think I should be doing this. But when he meets Hank, Hank starts quoting that line to him.
Right. And now he's quoting it back to him because Hank's the villain. Yes,
exactly.
It's great. Yeah. It's this wonderful circle. And then he puts together the whole last name connection. He was like, McLean. I thought it was a coincidence, all that. And then Hank is slowly realizing who the ghoul is. Mm-hmm. And then the ghoul says to Hank, "Where's my effing family?" Again, confirms the ghoul's motivation to find his family. But he keeps saying family, which seems to imply both Barb and his daughter.
Right.
I'm guessing they're still on good terms. Maybe Barb, even though she seemed like she was a bad person during that Vault Tech meeting, maybe she was just towing the company line and she was internally fighting to make things better. When I used to do the show with my daughter before you probably tuned in and knew what was going on with the Fallout Lorecast, and we were discussing the Enclave in Fallout 4. And I asked her, when you first finished Fallout 4, who did you side with? And she was like, the Institute. That's who we were talking about, the Enclave, the Institute. And she's like, oh, I sided with the Institute. And I was like, why? Why did you side with the Institute? And her justification was, because I wanted to be the person in charge so I could make it not evil.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So that makes me wonder, is Barb's motivation to actually try to make the system better from the inside, but she still has to toe the line during these meetings and things? I don't know.
I mean, my expectation is more he's trying to find his daughter and his wife. I mean, it's...
Or maybe he's finding his wife, daughter, because he wants to make sure she's alive and safe, and his wife for revenge.
Yeah, it maybe. Could be both. Yeah, again, this scene is a little bit weird because earlier... I believe it's intentional because as he goes to shoot him, Hank turns away and turns
yes,
and runs away.
He flies off, yeah.
And he doesn't kill him, which implies, and I think we get it later, that he actually wanted Hank to run away.
Yeah, he says a line about it. So we'll get to that in a minute. The ghoul then says, "War never changes. Look out at this wasteland. It looks like chaos, but there's always somebody behind the wheel. And that's who I want to talk to. That's where your daddy is headed." Now, maybe that was the shady character in the rafters in that meeting scene. We definitely think it may have something to do with Mr. House based on the trailers and all of that. So we're going to have to see. But then his justification is that he plans to track him. It's not that he wanted him to survive. It's that it's easier to track somebody and follow where they're going than it is to ask them to tell them where they're going.
Well, and I like that they deliver that line quickly. Because that's the thing. When you're watching the show, you're like, did he just, like, you just killed everyone in Power Arm. Like, it was nothing. And this guy turned around. You went, impossible. And then, it becomes
clear. No, there's
clear.
A reason.
I can actually track him. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. He says, "Your whole world was decided over 200 years ago." And then says, "Stay here and deal with the Brotherhood of Steel." Or the dilemma becomes, "Stay here and deal with the Brotherhood of Steel, or come with me and meet your makers," is kind of the thing that the ghoul presents to Lucy. Lucy picks up the gun, points it, not at the ghoul. We think, oh, is she pointing at the ghoul? But now she puts her mother out of misery because she's this terrible falling apart creature that no longer knows who she is.
And Lucy is continuing the standard Fallout character arc where you are now becoming this, you know, kind of cold killing machine out in the wasteland.
Right.
Because he's still with good morals, but that's what I have to be.
Well, I love the twist on this because if it wasn't for her experiences in the wasteland, she wouldn't have been capable of doing the kindness of putting her mother out of her misery. And so she does a good through violence that she would never have been able to do or learned about except for her experiences. So she is growing as a character. And in this violent sort of way, she saves her mother, which is kind of cool if you think about it.
No, I like it. Yep.
So she has to leave Max. He hasn't woken back up yet. She leaves him with a kiss. And then she says the most sinister okie dokie ever. Okie dokie. Max wakes up. First thing he says is Lucy. And then he repeats it three times. Mm-hmm. That's how much he doesn't care about anything else that's going on in the scene. He wants to find her because he wants to be with her. But I think he's also wondering if she's safe.
That's why, because the Brotherhood is here attacking.
Yes.
He's there to save her from being collateral,
right,
if not worse,
right,
of the Brotherhood.
Right. Moldaver returns into the room. She says, Rose, Lucy's mom's name. She's limping and bloody. She's clearly wounded. She activates the power. She's bleeding out. And to me, this was like this last action of hers before she died. She knew she was dying. She knew that they were going to get the cold fusion.
But this is her life's work, don't forget.
Finally, right.
Coming to culmination.
Culmination. Yep. She wanted to see that it was accomplished and it worked. And then the skyline just lights up. The remaining grid that's still there, plugged into light bulbs and whatever, lights up due to the power. And then she's bleeding out, right? She's done. Right. She realizes she can't stop the Brotherhood. And so this is her final moment. We get this line. What would your Brotherhood do with infinite power?
Yeah,
maybe you can stop them. Maybe you can't. Maybe all you can do is try. And then she dies.
Yeah. When that, and this, I think, is setting us up for season two with Maximus.
Right.
Where, as we said earlier, Maximus is supposed to be, you know, the sword to the leadership of this.
Quintus is,
brains. Yeah, the thing about swords is swords sometimes are used to cut the heads off of kings.
And yes, so, they can stab both directions.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what happens next with Maximus kind of starts to set that up, because Dane comes in.
Yes.
Right.
Dane says, was that their leader? You killed her. Didn't ask, did you kill her? Proclaims, you killed her. And then raises his hand and has them all hail Knight Maximus as a hero.
So now,
right.
And that's the idea, because this is the whole issue with Maximus, is that now, as we were talking about last episode, his character arc has moved on. He's no longer the dolt from the earlier, like the dolt, fearful child he was before. And now he has a purpose and power. Mm-hmm. So now we're setting him up for the question, do you go and pursue Lucy, your interest, or do you go and save the wasteland? And that's the choice that we're kind of implying is coming down the pipe, Adam.
Yes, yes. Also, Maximus has spent this entire season being somebody he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And the season ends with him being proclaimed the person who killed Moldaver and a hero of the Brotherhood, which is still somebody he is not. He is still living a lie at the very end, which is like he's trying to get out of that and is now pulled back in even more. Then we get the song. This one shows up in the Fallout games. We three, my echo, my shadow, and me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line there that says, we three were all alone living in a memory. So poignant. Mm. I also feel like this ties into the three main characters who, even though like Lucy and the Ghoul are together at the end of this, all of them are still fundamentally alone. They have not really connected to other human beings yet. They're still searching for their humanity.
But I think that's the overarching story of Fallout.
Yeah.
You know, your Fallout companions are not annoying at best. You know, when you play, I mean, like I said, I mean, Fallout 4, they got a lot better in 4, but in most of the games, I mean, even dog meat was a pain in the butt to drag around with you. Like, it was oh, how do I not shoot this person?
Right.
Why can't I enter this room? Oh, it's because you're stuck somewhere trying to run into a door.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing.
Yeah, so that's true. It's true. But we start to get like character arcs in New Vegas for your companions. And then they really flesh them out a lot in Fallout 4, where you have your relationship with your characters, with your companions, can grow and blossom into friendships and things like that.
I still hated playing with them next to me. Like, the
story arcs
were great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, they're next to me? Oh, this is going to be so much harder. Like, that's how it always was. But
yep. And then this show ends, right? We've got the Hollywood sign sponsored by Vault-Tec. I thought that was interesting.
Yep, that was cute.
Death Claw skull, the view of New Vegas with the damage.
Well, we get the review. We get the big reveal, which I think was their way of saying, all right, this is a super John theory here. But
okay.
My theory is they wrote the show and the people behind the game went, hey, this isn't great. The show's good, it's not great, and I'm worried that the Fallout fans may not be a huge supporter of it.
Almost like they're catering too much to the people who don't know what Fallout is instead of people who know what Fallout is.
What do? They say, okay, everyone went through the show. The show's good, don't get me wrong, but they're like, it's not that Fallout-y. So what do? I know, we'll take it to Vegas. Mm. Because at that point, you take every Fallout fan and we all jump out of our chairs when we see Vegas.
Right.
Because this is, and again, I love Fallout 1, I love Fallout 2, but I would never fight that Fallout New Vegas is not the best version of the game.
Right.
Like that's a battle that you auto lose.
Right. The contingent of the fan base who believes that is the most vocal and loudest and picky contingency of the fan base online.
Yeah.
And it made sense that they realized as the creators of the show that they needed to play into that group.
Yeah. Well, I think
they needed to get their approval, I think, is the idea.
And so where by moving it to Vegas, you get so much out of the game that, obviously I full support. That's my theory on why it's going to Vegas. Because it didn't have to. They could have gone to a new setting. You could have picked anywhere. But the fact that they picked Vegas, they brought Mr. House, makes this very interesting. And also it's kind of cool.
It also gives anybody who's a fan of any of the Fallouts the ability to go back to a game and play a game and go, oh, okay, even if they didn't play New Vegas, maybe you're somebody who just started with Fallout 4 or played 76.
Right.
You should go
play New Vegas.
You go play New Vegas. You could get through it.
You should go play. If you have not played New Vegas, you should go play New Vegas.
Right.
I don't think you should play Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, but you need to go play New Vegas. Anyway.
Yeah, but to my point, they could go back and play that, have that experience, and then prepare themselves for seeing things that are now familiar in the next season, which completely plays up that the buzz online, which tells the people who are not plugged into the games, something cool is going to happen. You should keep watching the show.
Yeah.
So it makes sense from a marketing standpoint. It makes sense from a making sure that the fan base is on board with it standpoint. The only dilemma then becomes how do they play out the events of season two with or without confirming which ending is canon. And one of the things they've traditionally done is try not to confirm a definitive canon for a previous game. They will take certain characters and bring them back, or they will take certain plot lines and further the plot lines. But it's very rare where they will go, okay, this is definitively the canon ending for this previous game. They try to avoid it.
That's one thing I'm excited about, because I don't see... effectively, they've put themselves in a corner here. If they do the lame, there actually was no conclusion, then everyone gets be furious. But, we've seen in the trailers that Caesar's Legion is there. So we know Caesar's Legion's there.
Yep.
Also, we did an entire season here with no NCR.
Yep. Well, which is minimal NCR.
Well, in the sense of the hint that the NCR are gone,
I think they got blown up at Shady Sands. I think the people fighting back against the Brotherhood in the final scene would have defined themselves as having been members of the NCR, either currently or previously.
Right, because she finds the flag,
right,
and when she's in wherever the vault was, it Vault 4.
NCR flags were flying at the observatory.
Were they? Okay.
I believe so.
Maybe I missed that.
So I think these are NCR remnants, if nothing else.
Yeah. But something this way, if we go to New Vegas, we get NCR. We also still haven't seen the Enclave, which we know is coming, obviously.
Well, we saw a little glimpse with the scientist. But that was just very minimal.
But we don't know in the sense of like the Enclave, because this on the scientist, the Enclave looks independent, but we're not seeing the
leadership.
Vault-Tec the Enclave?
Right. Right.
Just simply put, it's something. So I think the next season is going to be really exciting because they do get to do a lot of these reveals. Plus give us cool things like a Deathclaw.
Yeah.
And they better give us Marcus.
And NCR power armor. And maybe Marcus.
Yeah. If that hint was not Marcus, I'm going to be very upset. I'll be honest.
What if it was another intelligent super mutant named
just Matthias. Do Marcus. There's no reason not to do Marcus. There's so many potentials there that it's just going to be
I think we'll get little glimpses of certain characters. People have pointed out, like, oh, I want this character to show up and I want this character to show up. And I get that everyone has different favorites. I don't think it wouldn't make sense to cover all of the ones who could potentially show up.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, John, thank you for joining me for all of these. This has been super fun going back over everything. And anything else you want to share before we wrap this up?
Thanks for having me. And again, if you guys, as I said last time, if you like the sound of my voice, you can hear a lot more of it. I'm available on the 40K Lorecast and the History of 40K. These are two shows in the Warhammer 40K universe. And if you like the sound of Tom and I, check out Retro Recall, where we're playing old video games, really from our youth, stuff in the 80s and the 90s. And spoiler alert, these games are hard. Like, yeah. Really, yes. Really hard.
Yeah.
Like I thought back, and I'm like, well, you know, whatever. I'm in my 40s now. You know, suck it, Mega Man 2. It's not 9-year-old John.
Freaking
anymore.
Dragon. It's stupid.
It turns
dragon.
Out 44-year-old John still struggles with a stupid game. God damn. But come check those games out. We really do have a wonderful time. I just have a blast playing these old games and dying horribly over and over again.
Yep. Fun times. Well, thanks, John, for joining me. And stay tuned. I'll be covering season 2 as the episodes come out. So lots of fun new content for that as we move forward. See you on the other side.
To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.